No, and again, that could be the third controversial opinion already in there.
Oh, no! I know. I'm becoming very controversial.
Well, we've got to do it, haven't we? We've got to step away from the beige, haven't we? Away from the beige. Let's become more exciting, you know. I might even sell some books, Tori, if this carries on, if I have some opinions. Only joking, listener.
Right, so the book is, weirdly, the book's called Tiny Voices Talk. There was a lot of controversy around that, but I've gone for Tiny Voices Talk because it's not one voice, it's many voices. It's actually 37 contributors. So the book is Tiny Voices Talk. If you're leading on teaching and learning, you need to be teaching and learning, you know, you need to be teaching, because I think all too often we have people leading on teaching and learning that are not actually spending any time with the children. And that frightens me, because you need to be teaching, you need to be on the front line to actually understand what it looks like.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Naylor's Natter the Book, ideas and advice from the collective wisdom of teachers. Naylor's Natter brings together a wealth of advice from the most influential voices in education today. In this exciting, one-of-a-kind book, Phil Naylor revisits the very best interviews from 3 years of education podcasting, drawing on the advice and opinions from some of the world's most innovative educators. Available now for pre-order from Amazon and out on July 7th, 2022.
Talking to teachers about educational books, why we love them, and how we use them in our classrooms. With guest authors, publishers, podcasters, and of course, teachers.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Naylor's Natter. Yes, it's like whichever Ewing it was in the shower in Dallas / Dynasty for people of a certain age. It's like we've never, ever been away. And what a way to come back for a special. And we've got Toria Bono with us today. Toria, welcome back to Naylor's Natter.
I am genuinely excited to be on that episode from Dallas, the shower scene with Bobby Ewing. I'm there. I'm Pam. I'm there.
Did you like how I was pretending, Toria, that I didn't know that it was Bobby Ewing? And I didn't know that it was, I was trying to pretend that I didn't know. You know.
Yeah, I knew that. I love the way you went, oh, could it be Dallas? Could it be Dynasty? I mean, we all know that you watched Dallas, Dynasty and the Colbys. Like, who didn't watch the Colbys?
Exactly that. Now, so if we've lost anybody under the age of about 35, 40, then we apologise and we'll have to press the restart button. But you know, do you know what? On the second iteration, Naylor's Natter 2.0, as Doug Lamoff might call it, you know, we just don't care. We're just going to embrace this now. We like some strange things. But today's episode, I'm really, really excited about and really pleased that Tori has trusted Naylor's Natter with the exclusive on the new book. So the new book that we're talking about today is Tiny Voice Talks, and it is a Crown House book, and it's going to be out pretty soon, Tori, isn't it?
Yeah, it's insane. It's funny because I had the original conversation about it in April 2021 with Ian, and I don't know, I sort of assumed that it'd be a real quick turnaround. I've never written a book before, and like when I sent off the first thing, the first draft, I sort of assumed that was it done, really, and it wasn't, and it's taken a long time to come to fruition, and now we are looking at November 2022 for it to be published and out there and in people's hands, which just seems unbelievable, actually.
And incredibly exciting. And I've been very privileged, listener, to have a pre-copy of this for quite a while now. So I'm working my way through the chapters. And, you know, it's really, really important to recognise how long this has taken. But the fact that the process has taken so long shows you the quality of contributions, the quality of the articles and the sections of the book, and the advice that's in there from so many different people. It's just absolutely a must read for all teachers, I would say. So congratulations, Toria, on that, and to everybody who's contributed to it as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I am so excited to bring so many amazing voices together. And it feels like a real privilege to have been able to hold that space and hold their voices, really. And I just can't wait for people to hear them. I know they'll physically be reading it, but it feels like they're hearing the tiny voice talks.
It absolutely does. Right, so let's get into the questions. So listener, we like to prepare thoroughly. So obviously we've got a set of questions here, which we might stick to, but you know, in Nailers Natter 2.0, who knows? I might even start with some opinions, Toria. Who knows? Let's see. So tell listeners, if you can, to start off with about the butterfly effect and how Edward Lorenz, I think it is, his theory led to tiny voice talks.
So yeah, I've always loved the idea of the butterfly effect. So the butterfly effect is that when a butterfly flaps its wings in Tokyo, it could lead to a tornado in Tennessee. And I've always thought how powerful that is, that such a tiny, tiny creature can actually affect change in another part of the world just by flapping its wings. Insane. But I think the tiny voice talking is just like that. So actually, when a tiny voice is silent, no change is occurring. But actually, by that one voice saying that one thing, that can instigate immense change, and not just in that classroom or in that school, but potentially across in the other side of the world. And that's how powerful I think our voices are. And we forget to use them. But I really believe that if we start flapping our proverbial wings, we can absolutely instigate change. And that's why I'm all about tiny voices talking.
Absolutely. And if you think as well, for the listener, the number of people, and I referenced this in a recent podcast that I did with Beyond Good, the number of people that are in your staff room, in the classrooms of your schools, that have got just the richest amount of experience and the amount of knowledge that aren't heard. And, you know, whilst this is not intended necessarily to be a direct criticism of all things edu Twitter, there are some large dominating forces, many of whom, for whatever reason, are not in the classroom or no longer in the classroom. It's really refreshing and encouraging and inspiring to hear from that broad range of people that you've had on Tiny Voice Talks and that contribute to the book as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what I wanted to counter. I have no issue whatsoever with the louder voices. But I think sometimes we look to the louder voices and we listen to them and we think, oh, I need to do this, that and the other, as opposed to actually going, let's use my voice and share what I'm doing. And I think sometimes we're so busy wanting to follow the crowd that we forget to actually follow our own instinct. And sometimes our instinct can lead to the best teaching ever.
Absolutely. Okay, the next question I'm going to ask Tori, I feel like I need to do in some kind of Morrissey voice.
Okay, go.
Because it says, I'm not going to break into Frankly, Mr. Shankly, but Frankly, Victoria, you are beyond help. So how did that comment inspire you to become the antithesis of those type of teachers and instead become that teacher?
Right. Yes, I'm with you. Yes, though that was said to me, frankly, Victoria, you're beyond help. That was said to me by a chemistry teacher that I actually said, can I get some extra support? This was for my GCSE. And she just turned, frankly, Victoria, you're beyond help. And it was in that way, with that tone of voice, with the eyes, just utterly dismissive. And I was dismissed by a number of teachers in school, as I write about in the book. There's only really a couple that really saw me. To a lot, I was just an annoying insect, I would say. And actually, I wanted to ensure that the children in my care were seen and heard, and that I never, ever dismissed any child in the way that teacher dismissed me. I never wanted to say to any child, oh, frankly, you're beyond help. Instead, I wanted to say, let's see what we can do to change it. And it's funny because lots of people went into teaching because they had fabulous teachers that they wanted to emulate. I went into teaching because I wanted, now I'm going to say this, but I don't mean it in a big-headed way, so please don't think I am saying it in a big-headed way. I wanted to have the sort of teacher I wanted to be taught by. That's what I wanted. I wanted to teach children in the way I would have wanted to have been taught. And I wanted to see children in the way that I wish I had been seen. Because actually, I had a horrible time at school. I really did. I disliked school. I don't have fond memories of school. I'm not one of these people that can look back and go, oh, do you remember that? You know, how wonderful it was. I hated school. But I don't want any child that goes through my classroom to hate school, if that makes any sense.
No, it absolutely does. Yeah, absolutely does. And I've said this before and talked to people about this. You know, I'm not from a dynasty of teachers. I didn't know any teachers, particularly growing up. I haven't necessarily kind of gone down that particular path, but I can really empathize with the idea that you'd want to be the kind of teacher that you'd want to be taught by, which some would now say is middle-aged, dull and boring. But no, I'm joking. Well, kind of. But no,
I'm sitting here thinking, possibly. Although, no, definitely not dull. Middle-aged, yes. I think dull and boring, no. I mean, I burst into song regularly in class. I do still bounce around. I would debate you being middle-aged, dull and boring too. I don't think many of us are. I think if you're in education, it is hard to actually engage children if you're boring or dull.
Well, indeed. And this is like perfect segue. So we're already back into it, listener. We're already getting back into the stride in the podcast. We're back. So this next comment really flows from that. So I'd like to empathize with your next comment, not because I agree with the comment about this, but because this is often leveled at me and at the podcast in its original 1.0 iteration, that, you know, you're potentially beige and uncontroversial and don't really say anything that's going to particularly cause controversy. And I can sympathize and empathize, Tori, with this so much, because you think, right, you want to amplify the voices of your guests and you want to make sure that you're giving, you know, lots of people an opportunity to put their opinions out into the world. And as the host, as you are of your podcast, as the person coordinating things on Twitter and as the author of this book, you know, you think, well, I might just stick to kind of tried and tested, and I don't want to upset any of those people that sit by the keyboards on Twitter ready to say horrible things. So you've got in the book two controversial points about teaching. So listeners, you know, strap in, get yourself ready for this. Toria has two controversial points. So what are your two non-beige controversial points about teaching?
So, yeah, I would like to think that I'm beige. And I really thought when I wrote that initial bit in the book that I was beige, that I was actually quite beige. And then I realised I wasn't, because in the next section, which is part two, I started with I'm going to be controversial, because actually, you know, there are a number of things that really bug me. So first of all, it really bothers me that as professionals, we are given perfect lesson formats and told to teach like the teacher next door, because we can't. I don't know about you, but I have to teach like me. I cannot. And there was this thing going around Twitter and going around schools for a couple of years, you know, and it's still doing its rounds, actually. And it's like, this is how you need to teach the lesson. You need to start it like this. You need to do this in the middle. You need to do this at the end. And that would be a perfect lesson. By whose measure? Because actually, I cannot emulate someone else. I have to be me. And I learned that early on in my career when I was attempting to be this person that was held up as, oh, this amazing teacher. And I couldn't be them because I'm me. So that was, yeah, I have a real issue. We have to be ourselves in the classroom and we can't be someone else. So to anyone out there, especially ECTs, don't try and be someone else. Be you. Teach like you, because that will be the very best teaching that you can do. And then my second controversial point, we've got a duty to keep learning. You know, I am 23 years in, and I do not teach today the way I taught 23 years ago. I just don't. It doesn't even resemble it. I have just finished, this is going to sound bizarre on top of everything else I do, I've actually just finished a Sounds Right phonics course. So I was really interested in doing this phonics course because it was to do with the spelling as well as just the reading. And I've been doing that in my weekends over the last 6 weeks. And it's been about, I would say, about 8 to 10 hours each weekend. I've just dedicated to actually focusing and learning this new stuff. And actually, I'm really passionate about learning my craft. And I think that's really important, Phil, the fact that actually, as teachers, we don't walk out of university with, yep, I'm done now. We walk out and we're only just honing our craft. And we, you know, I really, truly believe that just like virtuoso pianists who still need lessons, I still need to be learning about my craft and take myself back, in a sense, to school to learn more. So, yeah, that's my two controversial points. I'll go back to being beige now.
No, not at all. So obviously get poised by the Twitter keyboards people to kind of come back on that and join in the discussion. I'm sure that we will have that, won't we? We'll have a hashtag, yes. Nailers Natter, Tiny Voice Talks, mashup. We'll have a hashtag where people can come back. But just to come back on that, because it's a really interesting point. So there's been advances, huge advances in the last few years in terms of professional development and things like the Early Careers Framework, things like the MPQs, for example. But I'm kind of with you on this, that there's a danger, again, that through these lethal mutations that Dylan William talks about, that, you know, particularly early careers teachers, and I think that this book would be brilliant for early career teachers, yeah, because it's a really nice introduction into all of these different opinions that you're not necessarily going to get through those formats. But there is a danger, again, through this, that you feel as if there's a shopping list of things you need to include in that perfect lesson. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm one of those people who very early in the early 2000s was the performing show pony that was wheeled out at other schools because he was able to put in every factor and feature of an Ofsted outstanding lesson in a box. It didn't matter what they were supposed to be learning about, Tori, by the way. It just meant I was doing a lesson on refraction to whoever wanted me to do it for whatever reason, because it had a starter and a mini plenary, and it had some kind of active learning in it, and it had some kind of whiteboards, which is still good, assessment in there. Then it had another mini plenary, and then we checked the learning outcomes again, and we moved through Bloom's taxonomy, and everybody learned precisely nothing, but they weren't half entertained. So there is a little bit of a danger, I suppose, in terms of that kind of shopping list of things. And what you've done with the book is you've given lots of different perspectives of how you can interpret lots of good evidence, lots of good research. Loads of it in the book, by the way. It's so well referenced, but how you can do that and make sure that you become the best teacher that you can be, not what somebody else wants you to be.
Yeah. And I think it's so, so important. It comes back to those loud voices and those tiny voices. You know, those loud voices tend to be the ones whose lesson plans we follow. But actually, are they still in the classroom? Are they still teaching? Are they still, you know, doing it on a daily basis? That's, you know, I think it's so important that we are thinking about what we are doing and if that's best for our children. And I think there are people like you were that were wheeled out as show ponies for this is the perfect lesson, and then everyone tries to emulate it. That doesn't mean it's right.
No, and again, that could be the third controversial opinion already in this
podcast.
Oh,
no! I know. I'm becoming very controversial.
Well, we've got to do it, haven't we? We've got to step away from the beige, haven't we? Step away from the beige. Let's become more exciting, you know. I might even sell some books, Tori, if this carries on, if I have some opinions. Only joking, listener. Only joking. And do you know the irony of it all, Tori, and I'm sure it's the same with your colleagues, that if you're going to get an accusation leveled at you for being beige, I mean, I'm like the complete opposite. I've got too many opinions. I'm quite often told to kind of rein them in on a daily basis at work. But obviously, you know, it's a bit scarier on social media. But your point is, and I couldn't agree more, that there's nothing wrong with external expertise. In fact, it was one of the Teacher Development Trusts, you know, the original CPD review in whatever year of 2017, 2018, that they talked about the importance of external expertise. But I think that what you've done in this book is you've actually shown that there's a wealth of internal expertise within the classrooms. We're just not tapping into it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what people forget. You know, if you've been teaching for a number of years, you have picked up a wealth of information that you can pass on. If you're an ECT, you have people in the school nearby you that have a wealth of expertise. And we forget to, number one, share the expertise because we think, oh, we probably aren't that great. Or we forget to ask the person next door. I mean, I know, I wish I'd known actually when I was, what was in the old days, the NQT. I wish I'd known then to tap into that wealth of sort of expertise, because I didn't. And I was so busy looking externally. As you say, the external's great. It's absolutely wonderful. But we forget to look closer to home. And that's, it's so important. And I think everyone within a school, everyone's got their expert areas that they are just brilliant at. But we forget to go and ask them. And those people forget to share their expertise.
And that's what you've done. So listeners, just a reminder that the book we're talking about today is Tiny Voice Talks, and it's a Crown House book. And obviously we'll put links to Crown House website on the show notes to make sure that listeners can find the book. But that's the thing that you've done, Tori, because I think that, and maybe this is just me getting old, but you know, we don't have as much time as perhaps we had. We don't have the time to sit in the staff room and have the conversations, you know. And I referenced one in our book about, you know, Michael, the geography teacher, who had lots of experience to give. And, you know, as a young ECT, NQT as it was then, I was able to sit down with him and he could tell me lots of things that he'd learned over the years. I mean, I didn't listen to any of them because, you know, I was wearing a pinstripe suit, a pocket square, and I was teaching out of a box. So, you know, what did some older guy in a tweed suit doing sort of teacher exposition, that sort of thing, textbooks, assessments, what did he know about learning? Oh, hang on. Yes, that's maybe what I'm doing now. But what you've done with the book is you've said, well, perhaps we don't have that time now to sit there with the more experienced colleagues or colleagues working in different conditions and like we used to do when we shared kind of groups and networks and things like that. You've brought all that together. And it's so nice to hear lots of different perspectives. And one of the things that I found flicking through the book is just nodding along with so many things and thinking, yes, that would be really good if I could find out more about that. Yes, it'd be good if I could go and visit that school and that person and talk about that. Yes, these are things that I know some people in our school are doing particularly well. It's just such a, well, it's quite an easy read as well, isn't it? You can dip in and dip out. So just tell listeners a little bit more about that then. So the format of the book, talk to us a little bit about how you came up with the format of the book and how you kind of want listeners and readers to use it.
Well, I would like to say that I came up with the format of the book. I had a completely different format originally, and when I gave it to Crown House and Ian, they looked at it with a bit like, I think it needs, you know, something you need to think it through slightly more, because I just had it. So as a teacher, I'd come at it with my teacher head on, which was, I've got so many minutes in the day and I can only dedicate this amount of time to reading. So I put everything under time slots. And actually, when you look at the book, you will see those time slots are still there. So it does still tell you how long each piece will take you to read. But I was sort of challenged to think more about how I wanted it to be broken up and what I wanted in it. And I thought, well, actually, let's start off about being that teacher. Actually, what does it mean? You know, really getting people to think about what sort of teacher do they want to be? And the very first chapter actually is called Be That Teacher by Leanne Herring. And it's really challenging people to think about who do they want to be as a teacher in that classroom. Then we go into part two, which is talking about teaching. Now, what I love about this isn't just talking about primary teaching, which is my area, or secondary teaching. This is talking about early years right the way across to further education and talking about lots of research, one of my favourite chapters is Nick Stewart's Understanding Schemata in Five Quotes, which I was like, I learned so much from that chapter. I was like, wow. Now, he's a secondary maths teacher. And actually, have I ever myself read a secondary maths book? No. But I learned so much from that chapter. So then we've got part three is Tiny Voice Talks about inclusion. Then we've got part four, Tiny Voices Talk about professional and personal development. Part five is Tiny Voices Tell Their Stories. And then finally, it's about how, you know, Tiny Voices Talk about ways to find your voice. So it's actually about readers finding their voice, opportunities for that. So there's so much within every single aspect, you know, and I think it's very much, as you said, for ECTs, it's great because it's giving you a flavour of lots of different things. And then you can think about, oh, I would like to learn more about this, for example. So if we just look at the part three, which is inclusion, in there, the chapters are 9 Reasons to Love Yovsenko, Fabulous Force Families, What Letter Are You, which is about LGBTQIA+, Moving Beyond the Label, Always Stay Below the Radar, which is about autism, Tiny Steps for Better Wellbeing, and All Kids Included, which is about race and disability and so on. So much in so many chapters. And my hope is that it will equip educators with a wider understanding of the world that they are teaching in, but it will also make people think, I want to find out more about that area and go further.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
Absolutely. And in terms of, you know, if you're thinking about people who are looking to buy the book now, did you envisage it being something that perhaps, because I thought this, that it'd be something that had formed the basis of like a staff book club, for example, where you could talk about different topics and it's a nice, gentle introduction into those. And like you said, how you can find out more. Or is it something that perhaps, you know, schools can base some CPD around, you know, particular areas of that? Or is it, again, just a way of building further on the community that you've already established with Tiny Voice Talks?
Initially, if I'm really honest with you, I was very, very focused on having the tiny voices heard. That was my real thing. And then with the help of Crown and Ian, I began to consider more the reader. And that sounds bizarre. I don't know if you had this, Phil, when you were writing your book, that actually you were writing it, but you weren't necessarily as focused on the reader. Then my focus suddenly shifted about halfway through the process, where I knew that the voices would be heard, but I began to think about who I wanted to be really listening and reading. And I think you're absolutely right. The idea of staff meetings being focused on specific areas within this, because actually if you were doing inclusion, you could have some really powerful CPD based on part three with inclusion, as I've just said. Equally, you've got, you know, the talking about teaching, there's some really powerful ones in there about early years, PSHE and so on. And I think the other idea of the book club, loving that idea, hadn't thought of it till you said, what a great idea, because actually so you could just dip in, and the conversations that could flow from each of these chapters, so powerful, really. Yeah, loving that idea. And, you know, anyone out there that's got other ideas about how you can use this book, let us know.
Absolutely. But I mean, I couldn't agree more in terms of you can see the editing process in there in terms of both yours and Ian's, that it does, it reads really well for, I know it sounds a ridiculous thing to say, but it does look like you've written it for the reader. Whereas actually some of the books that you read are kind of written as, look, here's all my expertise about this particular topic. If you like it, fine. If you don't, fine. But here it is, you know. Whereas yours is very much written with the reader in mind. And it's also written with busy teachers in mind, because I actually liked that. I mean, it's something that I've seen before in terms of, I think Ross does quite a lot on Teacher Toolkit. Whenever we do articles for Ross, it'll be a 4-minute read, a 3-minute read. Yeah. And you think, well, it's a bit gimmicky, but the reason for it is because teachers are busy people. And I mean, I'm reading a few books at the moment that are quite short chapters, and I find it quite rewarding, because I've been on the sort of Atomic Habits journey recently, and it's like, right, I want to identify myself as a reader, so I need to read every day. But trying to read, as we talked about on or off air, you know, Charles Dickens in one setting is quite difficult. But actually, with Tiny Voice Talks, pick it up. Do I want to talk about inclusion? Well, you know, there's a lot to talk about in terms of, you know, that particular area, lots of different angles on that particular area. So I can just pick up one and I'll read a 5-minute, you know, section here from one of the tiny voices. And then tomorrow I'll come back and I'll read a section about professional development. And it's very, very well formatted for a busy teacher, but also it's clearly written, like you said, with the reader in mind, which is what is going to absolutely capture people in this and want to buy the book, definitely.
Well, I was challenged by Ian and Crown, basically, in one of the very first meetings. I was challenged about what it is, you know, what did I want, really? That sounds really bizarre, but it was like, what is it you want the reader to get out of this? And I was like, oh, that's quite tricky. And I thought, do you know what? There are two things that I want. I want the reader to have takeaways. Because I think, I mean, I don't know about you, Phil, but as a teacher, I like a takeaway. I like something that I can do there and then in my classroom that will make a difference. And so there are lots and lots of those within the book. And the other thing was, and this was absolutely at the core of everything, I wanted it to make a difference to the children in the schools and in the classrooms. I wanted it them to actually have an impact from reading the words on the page. And that's why it was all focused very much, you know, to the reader and then to the children.
No, definitely. And that's what hopefully all of us in terms of podcasts, articles, books, everything else, it's the impact that we're seeing in the classroom. And the fact that, you know, and I was having a conversation with Emma, who leads our teaching and learning. Hello, Emma, because I know she will be listening. It's in your contract. I'm joking. It's not really. But, you know, we were talking about this kind of idea that, you know, we're actually quite teacher geeks. We actually like this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we actually like doing this. And when people say, well, you shouldn't be working during your half term, or you shouldn't be reading this. And I think, well, when I've read your book, it doesn't feel like work in any way. It feels like something that's going to inspire, enthuse, motivate me. Mm. And actually, I feel a more rounded teacher for the experience of having read that. So there's nothing wrong with actually liking the profession that you're in, even after 23 years of teaching the same lesson. No, I'm joking. I don't teach the same lesson every day.
But I do not think that, if we go back to my controversial point too, which is that, you know, we need to keep learning, we need to keep studying. Do you not think that it really engages you if that's what you're doing? I mean, I can't imagine not learning about it and just keeping doing the same thing day in, day out. I would be bored senseless. But this, the learning about it, the reading about it, the chatting to people on my podcast, the reading, that, you know, the reading all the submissions, the tinies, the putting the book together, it just makes me so excited about teaching.
You're right, Tori. And I think this is it. I mean, obviously people will say, well, we didn't know you'd gone, never mind, you're back. And I'm not necessarily saying that we are back. We're just doing a couple of specials. But, you know, I have missed that kind of interaction with other people talking about teaching. And actually picking up your book, which was the first teaching book that I've picked up, you know, on our brief hiatus that we've just had. And it does, it gets you going again, it gets you thinking about it. And I always said that when I was actually writing the book, that, you know, if this makes a difference to one other person as well as me, then it's absolutely worth doing. And, and we're very much the same in terms of the book. You know, it was kind of written in the way that there should be takeaways. So with Nailers Natter, the book, it was very much just, right, you should be able to pick this up, read a little section of it. There's a handy QR code, scan that and go and listen to that person talking about that there. And it's the same with this, isn't it? You could read the book from beginning to end. You could read the book in sections. You could read the book in just little bits of articles from each of the sections. You can read it in any way you want. But this is meant to be a compliment, so hopefully it lands like this. This is very much a coffee table book, I thought, that you could pick up, read, you know, put back down, pick up again. Oh, I'm reading a section from this particular person. And if people want to do this as well, then you go and try and find that person on Twitter, don't you? And find out a little bit more about that tiny voice and what kind of things they're working in. So it's a very much a book that, you know, you can invest in over time, pick up again and again, and find something new every time you do.
And that was the aim. I mean, I've got to be honest and say it wasn't necessarily a coffee table book. It was a break time book. That sounds bizarre. But I just kept thinking, I've got 15-minute breaks, you know. So in the morning, I have a 15-minute break and then I have a 45-minute lunch. At those times, sometimes I just want to do something that's slightly different from, you know, just sitting at my desk or grabbing a coffee or whatever. And I thought, I really like the idea of picking up a book and reading a 4-minute thing. Sometimes, you see, I go on and I will read a blog article or something online. And I thought, how good to have a book that you could just pick up and go, oh, that's 4 minutes long. I'll read that chapter right now. Just something slightly different in the midst of the day. That sounds bizarre, but that's how I thought about it.
Yep, and who am I kidding, listener, that I've actually got a coffee table? I mean, come on, I don't know who I'm trying to kid here. I think a break time book is a much better way to describe it, Tori.
I quite like the idea of your coffee table book, though. I imagine you've got all sorts of interesting books on it when I imagine it.
Yes, I have actually, but we'll pause that for now. We can leave that hanging, can't we? Listeners, feel free to contribute to the conversation. What has Phil got on an imaginary coffee table in the lounge? Answers onto that hashtag that we talked about before. Right, Tori, rowing it back to the book. So that we're both, you know, really passionate about is professional development. Obviously, we've worked in professional development and we're still very much leading on that, but hopefully from a classroom school setting. So how important is professional development, particularly, and I know you'll have seen this, with reports of slashed budgets and falling spending. So tell listeners a little bit about I think you call it your climbing wall, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Now, that came around in a conversation I was having with Nick Owens, because I was talking about the ladder, you know, the career ladder. And it worries me that people in, you know, in our profession are scaling the ladder quicker and quicker and quicker and feeling that they need to be at the top of the ladder super quick. And actually, within education, there are so many different directions that you can go in. And being a leader might not be what's right for someone. So from my point of view, you know, I have been in leadership, but actually I love teaching. I love that interaction with the children. I love working with children and so on. But I also love working with other teachers. So I've actually, in March I will finish, but I've been doing an apprenticeship in coaching and mentoring alongside a level 5 diploma in coaching. And that's been a completely different thing, because it's really allowed me to develop my skills in a different way, Phil, you know, and I've been able to support teachers very differently, but it's been wonderful. And I think what we need to do in education is throw away our ladders and this way of, oh, I need to just go up, you know, I need to scale upwards, because that might not be the right direction for people. There are so many other opportunities out there. And I think we're very, again, with the MPQs, people seem to think that an MPQSL is better than MPQML. And then, and people are like, oh, I need to do this, then this, then this. But actually, what I think people need to do is think, why? What do I want to do and why do I want to do it? And I would say that titles and labels are really dangerous to go after. And I would really, I challenge people to think about what it is they want to do and how they want their career to look. You know, mine now, oh, I have a fabulous time of it. I teach children, I coach teachers, I lead teaching and learning, and I love it. I'm just in seventh heaven with what I do. But I've created that as opposed to following some sort of ladder, if that makes any sense. I often say, if that makes any sense. I don't think I think anything I say makes sense. So I tend to finish everything with, if that makes any sense.
Well, just to read, it makes perfect sense. And I actually put a section in Naylor's Natter. He says, third shameless plug for this book, in somebody else's interview. Sorry about that, Tori. I'll cut these. I'll get rid of these.
No, you crack. I think you plug away with the book. We're doing a Naylor's Natter, Tiny Voice Talks, you know, sort of morphing together thing. We might as well morph the books together as well.
Well, I bring it up because there's actually a section in the book, in my book, about exactly what you're talking about there, where I detail a conversation that I'd had with a head teacher who'd obviously GDPR compliant, had discussed an interview with a particular aspiring deputy head teacher many, many years ago, people, and didn't use names, but just said that the interview consisted really of, you know, lots of questions from the panel around what kind of things you'd like to do and why you would like to be a deputy head in this school. And the answers seem to boil down to, well, I've been doing this for a long time. I think it's about time that I was promoted. And I think that deputy head is the next stage of my journey. Therefore, I think I should be a deputy head in your school. Now, unsurprisingly, this candidate did not make the cut on this particular occasion. But it does speak to what you're talking about there, that there's this kind of linear progression expected, yeah, development that seems to consist of, right, I need to rise through the ranks of teaching, move into senior leadership, come away from the classroom, which another of my big bugbears, and I know it is yours as well, this idea that, you know, the more you go up through leadership, the less you teach, the higher your status in terms of, you know, perhaps staff, but certainly children, is the less that you teach. And actually, if you're seen to be a classroom teacher, it's like, well, you can't possibly be a leader because I've seen you in a classroom. You know, leaders just wear high vis jackets and walk around with walkie talkies on corridors, don't they? That's what leaders do. So it's absolutely right what you're talking about there, that, you know, there's got to be a reason why you want leadership. So what is it you want to lead on? Are you passionate about teaching and learning? Do you want to lead on teaching and learning? In which case, it would be a good idea to be still in the classroom, because otherwise, how do you know what kind of things you're bringing in work? How do you know what kind of things you're doing are any use to anybody else? And how can you learn from other people that are doing it? You know, if you're going to lead on, if you're passionate about leading on behaviour, so someone like Strico, you know, the man that was on Nail His Natter More Than I Was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very passionate about leading on behavior as the head teacher. You know, are you wanting to be, and it's going to be the next question I'm going to ask you, Tori, about the inclusion section of the book. But, you know, do you want to be a SENCO? Do you want to work with students in those particular areas? And you think that that is a hugely important job. So just seeking leadership for, you know, status or, well, it's probably not going to be money, is it, listener? Because none of us are doing this for money in the world of public service. But, you know, the status or the freeze or the high vis or the walkie-talkie, whatever the motivation is, it should start from perhaps the why do you want to do it and what are you going to do with that? And that really does come through in the book.
I'm so pleased. And I think you've touched on something that is probably another controversial point, listeners. I'm really controversial, Phil. You're making me incredibly controversial. But it's the fact that actually, if you're leading on teaching and learning, you need to be teaching and learning. You know, you need to be teaching, because I think all too often we have people leading on teaching and learning that are not actually spending any time with the children. And that frightens me, because you need to be teaching, you need to be on the front line to actually understand what it looks like. And I think sometimes, due to leaders being more and more and more removed, that can actually really impact on them being on the front line and actually teaching children.
Absolutely. And, you know, as somebody who's recently done this I wouldn't like to say to how much success, but it's given me, and it I can't understand why people wouldn't want to do it, Tori, either. Mm. Because if you think, right, well, I'm going to bring in particular ways of working, so whatever it might be, you know, if you're looking at some instructional coaching, some subject knowledge enhancement, some way of you know, looking at improving pedagogy, then if you're going to try that in your own classroom and think, right, okay, well, this is really working, or, you know, even things like logistics about how it might work, you pick up all of those issues working in the classrooms with the students. And also you pick up a lot of the issues that the students might be having while you're working in there. It just seems really strange to me. And also this happens with people who write education books, or people who, you know, this is why this book is particularly important, I think, listener, because you're getting the authentic voice of the classroom. It seems that, you know, if you've written a book and it becomes particularly successful, one of the first things that you do is immediately move away from school and go into some form of consultancy, telling everybody else how to teach, which is great. And I'm sure it's very helpful to other places that you're going to be helping. But actually, are you getting further and further away from what everybody else is doing? And it does surprise me that authentic voices of the classroom are not listened to more than people who say, you know, when I used to teach, this is what we do. Because I only had about 12 months off. I say off, listener. I mean, obviously, I was in school. I was doing other things. But it's surprising how much you need to sharpen your saw, as the old Stephen Covey Seven Habits quote went. You know, you do lose a lot very, very quickly. So it's important to stay in touch with it and stay authentic, which is exactly what everybody contributing to your book is doing.
It's interesting. I was in leadership for 5 years before moving back into the classroom, actually. And the amount that education had changed in those 5 years was unbelievable. It really was. And I found that I really had to take myself, in a sense, back to school and relearn and understand those changes that had occurred, because things do move on and we do need to keep, sharpening our saws.
I think that's the right quote. But again, I'll put a link, listener, into the podcast show notes for Stephen Covey.
Yeah, but I think it's absolutely vital, you know, because it does, you know, things move on so quickly. And what I think's wonderful now is that we do have so much research out there. You know, I know you're passionate about research. There's so much research out there that wasn't out there 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And actually, we're learning so much more about what we need to do and how we need to teach.
Indeed. And I just realised, Tori, that we've shot ourselves in the foot, haven't we, for the six-figure consultancy from a large academy chain wanting us to go and be CPD coordinators, working from home 3 days a week. Yes, we've ruined that, haven't we? They're not going to be getting those offers, are we now?
Sad times. Oh, well. It's okay. I'll stick with my little people.
Yes, yes. And yeah, I'm absolutely loving life teaching GCSE science. I actually genuinely am. Back in the classroom, it's great. Right, last couple of questions, Toria, moving on swiftly from these controversial opinions. And the inclusion chapter. Now, somebody that I've worked very, very closely with recently and seen the value of is the Senko. So talk to us a little bit about why it's important that we heard from authentic voices in that area. And I think that the chapter's called, he says, checks note, is it nine reasons, or what, the section, sorry, the small, the tiny voice.
Nine reasons
why I love the Senko. Yes, tell us about that.
So Penny I met through Twitter, and I actually interviewed her for my podcast because I said to her, no one knows what the Senko does. Like, no one does. They're like this person that's in school that just is always very, very busy rushing around and seems to do an awful lot of paperwork, but no one actually knows what the paperwork's about and no one really knows what you're doing. And so on the podcast, she talked about it for me, but I said, you know, I really wanted something in the book that sort of explained more about Senkos, that they are not someone that is apart from, but is someone that's absolutely there on your side. You know, they do understand what you're facing. They do want the best for your children, but they don't always have the answers. And I think this is something that's really interesting, the fact that often we'll go to Senko with, oh my goodness, I've got this child with Tourette's, you know, how do I support them? And they might not know, because actually they might not have, you know, just because they're a Senko doesn't mean they've gone through every single training out there and every single thing that potentially a child in the school might have. And I think that's really important. And I think the other thing that I've really learned from Penny is the fact that they have an immense workload, and that when they're asking you for paperwork, it's because they're attempting to fill in an EHCP, or they're attempting to actually manage something that, you know, they've been asked to do by a hospital or something else. And that actually the paperwork they're dealing with is really complex. And when they're asking me to just fill in a form, that's just one of many, many forms. Because I know I always used to think, well, I'm doing all the Senko's work because I'm filling in the forms. And it's not. I'm filling in a small part of all the paperwork that they are doing. And the other thing that I learned from Penny is the fact that actually, you know, they don't know every child in the school. So that's why we need to talk to them about the children. The last point she makes, though, is a Senko as a human being. Absolutely vital. They are. And I think the more you get to know your Senko, the more you go, oh, yeah, no, I totally get who you are and what you're doing now. But it's vital to develop that good working relationship with Senko. And so that's why I'm so happy that chapter's in there, and that she's sort of boiled it down to really simple points, because it's, you know, Senko can be someone that is apart from, but there's someone that's absolutely vital to know, because they are fighting for you and your children and really working hard. You just don't always see everything.
No, and it's a great section, Toria. And I mean, as somebody who is line managing Senko, just, you know, a massive amount of respect to everybody who is doing that job. And, you know, I think that it's written so well, that particular article. It kind of marries nicely with the stuff that I know you've read as well. And I've spoken to Gary Orbin from the EEF, who talks about the role of the Senko, and he's quite passionate about pushing that forward. You know, again, I don't want to do four lots of controversial opinions, listeners, but, you know, why not? It's only a special. Let's go wild on our special. But I would personally, I start to advocate the importance of the Senko on the senior leadership team. When you think of the number of positions that have been on the senior leadership team in various iterations over the years, certainly since I've been doing it, you know, you've had lots of people who were on the SLT for data, very important, not saying it isn't, you know, other areas that have been on for transition, things like, again, very important. But why have we never looked more widely? And obviously people can come back to me and say, well, our Senko's always been on the SLT and great. But I think it's really important in terms of inclusion to have the Senko contributing to those discussions. Because if you're talking about behaviour, the Senko is going to have some important information that you're going to need to work with in terms of policy and practice. If you're working with teaching and learning, you're going to need some input from the Senko in terms of how best to teach, you know, all students and students with SEND as well. And also, you know, in other areas, the Senko is going to have really important opinions to share. And that's why it's really important, again, a tiny voice that isn't heard routinely, because, you know, apart from Gary, I'm not aware of any Edu celebrity Senkos, but I think there should be more of that in terms of not necessarily the celebrity section, but being heard from more. And I think that, you know, some schools now, particularly, you know, if numbers of students with SEND are rising, could do with 2 Senkos, 3 Senkos. And actually, that would free the Senkos up to do exactly what we talked about previously, is be in the classroom again, showing other teachers what kind of things we can do to help students with SEND. And actually then, you know, more sharing more widely the best approaches that we can use. So thank you for that particular section. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, thank you. No, I think it's going back to the whole thing about Senkos being on senior leadership. So I know schools where they are and schools where they aren't. And I think you're right. They're a tiny voice that sometimes does not get heard, but they are absolutely vital to the high functioning of the school, really.
Okay, right. Last couple of questions, Tori, if we might. Let's talk about the podcast, because what a huge success the podcast has been. And obviously, you know, your Tuesday tweets as well, been a huge part of it. So tell us a little bit about the future of the podcast and what guests you've got currently and what guests you've got coming up.
The podcast is just, yeah, it's been wonderful, because I didn't realise when I started, I don't even really think I knew what a podcast was properly when I started it. And I love chatting to everyone on it. I have managed to, I hate saying raise the voices, but it is, you know, the idea, the premise of the podcast was that anyone could come on that had something that they wanted to say. And they came on and they talked about it. And I have learned so much about a myriad of things, educationally linked, of course, but from so many different educators. Last month, I found myself talking to someone in Canada about, you know, what are the place for schools nowadays. I was talking to someone in North America about, you know, effective discourse within school. I found myself talking to, you know, someone, well, just people about maths, English, science. I find myself talking to all these wonderful people about so many different subjects, and I go away, even if no one else listened to it, I find that it's actually improving my teaching and learning. I am really excited that it's booked up already, believe it or not, until February next year, with people already booked into August slots, which I find so strange, Phil. But people seem to get it, and people seem to really want their voice heard. But equally, you've always been a wonderful supporter of it, because I think you've always got what it's been about, which is actually raising up the voices of people that aren't always heard. And it's just fabulous, really. I love it. Absolutely love it. So I do have some of the contributors coming on over the course of the next few months to talk about not just their chapter in the book, but also what they're up to and what they're doing. And I've got many more people coming on. So it's sort of listen, you know, just watch this space, subscribe, watch this space is what I would say about the podcast.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Tori. And yeah, congratulations again on the podcast. It's definitely part of my weekly routine to make sure that I'm listening every week. And again, like I said, I love what you said there about, you know, it's if one person gets something from it, then it's worth doing. And that's how it feels. It feels quite an intimate podcast that you're speaking to the listener. And I find it really, really useful, really, really helpful. And just, you know, broadens my horizons. I said this to you previously. We always give a little shout out to Teacher Hug Radio. I know that we're for one reason or another, neither of us are helping at the moment. But the communities of people that we got through that, and the communities of people that you get through your podcast, it really helps to kind of widen your perspective on education. And again, I feel like I'm hammering the bigger voices. So apologies if, you know, if you class yourself in that category. But it's nice to hear from a wide variety of people. And I think Tiny Voice Talks definitely does that. Okay, right, Tori. I think it's gone pretty well, listener. I think, you know, we're still a bit rusty on my end, but, you know, we're getting back into it. So last question. Tell us again what the book is, when it's available, what things you'll be doing to promote the book. Are you having a launch or are you going out speaking about it? And just tell listeners where they can find more about you and all things Tiny Voices.
Oh, my goodness. Right. So the book is, weirdly, the book's called Tiny Voices Talk. There was a lot of controversy around that, but I've gone for Tiny Voices Talk because it's not one voice. It's many voices. It's actually 37 contributors. So the book is Tiny Voices Talk. You can get it from the Crown House site, from the Independent Thinking Press site, but you can also get it from Amazon. It is going to be released soon. And when I say soon, like properly soon. So we're waiting for it to come back from the actual printing press, and then it will be ready for publication. So we're looking at November. There will be a book launch, and there will be one live, which will be sometime in November. But there's also going to be, I think I'm going to do one sort of, you know, a less formal one, which will be online. So that would be really exciting. And yeah, to find out more about me, the podcast, the book, everything, just go to my website, which is tinyvoicetalks.com. And if you want your voice heard, there's links on there to, you know, contact me to get your voice heard. And I'm always interested in talking to people and finding out more. Yeah, just keep and if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know, which is at Toria Clare, you will know absolutely when the book's out, because I probably won't stop screaming about it or jumping up and down with joy for days after it comes out. Because I am, do you know what, Phil? I am so anxious about the wider world seeing this book and reading the book, but I'm also so unbelievably proud of what's being created. You know, Tiny Voices Talk, I really hope, had not only empowers the people that wrote it, but also empowers the people that read it to use their voices and start flapping their wings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Just firstly, Tori, I've done that thing that everybody does with my book/podcast, which is I've given it the wrong name all the way through. You've been kind enough not to correct me on that as I've gone all through, because I get Naylor Natters, any variation on what it actually is. But I think that's just a slip of the tongue on my part. So listen, if we go back in. So the book is Tiny Voices Talk, which makes sense.
It does. It took a long time to get to that one, because it was like, oh, but do we do it? And it was actually, no, do you know what? It is. It's tight. So the podcast is Tiny Voice Talks. Everything else is Tiny Voice Talks, but the book is Tiny Voices, because it's many voices. It's not just one. And that's why, as I say, it took a long time to get to that point. But I think actually, perhaps it will stick more because it isn't just one voice, it's many.
Okay, so those two words you used there, Tori, about anxious and proud of it coming out. I mean, I'm sure that I'm speaking for the listener here in saying that don't be anxious about it coming out. It is absolutely, to use the butterfly metaphor, going to fly. People are going to be buying this in their droves. People are going to be using this. People are going to be enjoying it. And you and the team should be hugely proud of everything that you've done to amplify their voices, to give them an opportunity to speak to a wider audience, you know, both in this country and hopefully across the world. So congratulations to you. Congratulations to the team. It's a great book. And Tiny Voices Talk will be out in November. And I, for one, can't wait to get a physical copy in my hand and go and tell everybody about it. So, Tori, thank you so much for coming on to Naylor's Natter again. And hopefully, who knows, if we carry on with this specials format, we might be able to revisit this again for book two, Tiny Voices 2. It's a possibility.
Absolutely. And I am so grateful that you have allowed me on your special, because, as you know, I'm a huge fan of Naylor's Natter. And just saying, if everyone hasn't read Phil's book, you've got to read Phil's book as well as the Tiny Voices Talk book. Fabulous book. I'm so grateful, Phil, for all your support for me and all the tinies. So thank you very much for having me.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.